This, when you listen to this kind of music, and they're very alert, you can notice a sound at the point where it ceases, the flute, the sound of the flute. And then it dissolves. There's a little point where the sound comes to an end and weakens and then disappears altogether. So if you listen to this kind of music with complete attention, that's a particularly beautiful point, because that's where the manifested merges with the unmanifested, the sound dies. And so, and with the master sometimes, that's a very subtle thing to allow the sound, because the masters don't, they allow the Tao, the consciousness, to play the instrument through them. And so there's a very subtle movement towards cessation. And the sound weakens for just a very short instant, and then nothing. So it's the interplay between always something and nothing. And that's your entire life. Talking about music, there's a beautiful poem, I believe it's by Hafiz, the poet, and he says about himself, "I am a hole in a flute that the Christ's breath moves through. Listen to this music." Note that he didn't say, "I'm a flute that Christ plays," that's nice too, but no, "I'm a hole in the flute." And that's the same with all spiritual teaching, is arises in that way. And you come to realize that you also are a hole in the flute. And perhaps before you thought you were the flute, and before that you thought you were the player of the flute. And yet you are all these things also. This is the last session of the retreat. Not that that means very much. Only the form. We may look at a few written questions today, but always at retreats and so on, there are more questions than one could get through, although I keep them all. One day you may see the question that wasn't answered here in a book answered. By then, you won't need the answer anymore. And you may have forgotten that you asked it, because in a way you didn't. The human mind asks questions. And a few questions are helpful pointers. Other questions take you into speculative regions. Some questions are helpful, other questions could be distractions. But all questions are there, interesting, I like reading them. Now you may find, if your question is not answered here, that you may not have known it before, that you may have a personal relationship with your question. You may feel, why didn't he answer my question? It was so good. And why did he answer all those, there were such silly questions that he answered. And mine, he didn't mine. He didn't answer mine. And then you feel diminished in your sense of self. Or you feel reactive, angry with me, which is designed to strengthen your sense of self or combat the diminishment. And so we talked about the deeper sense of reincarnation, and so it means you're reincarnated into your question. What, and that means your sense of self became entangled in a thought, because the question is a thought. So the sense of me, self, identity, became entangled in the form of that thought, and there's some, you derived some sense of selfhood from that. And you may also derive it if a question is answered, and maybe I said, this is a good question. Oh, I asked a good question. I'm not talking about any particular person here, because this is how the mind works. So if this happens to you and there is a sense of self in your question, it is more important, more useful, far more vital to observe that in yourself than to receive an answer. You learn much more from that inner observation than from any answer you could get. We, in this last session, we are moving to this point where we allow questions to subside. And we could also observe the inner impulse to ask more, know more, and watch that. Ramana Maharshi was a great master, although he did answer certain questions beautifully, but many questions he didn't answer. There were far more questions that he didn't answer than he answered. Probably answered 5% of questions that people asked him. And so, most questions were met with silence, stillness, greater than any answer could be. And then you learn something about attachment to a form and to a thought as a me, a very subtle, temporary form of me. So we allow these silent spaces here. We don't need to fill them with another question, although I may shuffle some papers. We allow the silent spaces. The mind may come in when we have a silent space now and say, this is by chance, get your question in there now, before it's too late. It's always nice to have a funny question too, so here's a funny, slightly funny. I find some people get on my nerves without any particular reason, and although I do some serious surrendering and being present, they still get on my nerves. On top of it, I can't get my eyes off them. It's almost as though I love hating them. Is there any redemption for me? And by the way, where did you get those fabulous sounding bells? Bells were given to me a few years ago. I may have had them for 7 years or 8 years. And it seemed somebody, the Dalai Lama, gave them to somebody who then had them for a few years, and then they were passed on to me to be used in here. Otherwise, the person knew they were used for this purpose, so it was beautiful to let go of that gift. It's rare, the sound is of a very rare purity. So the people that get on your nerves, that's an aspect of how the ego keeps itself going, critical, complaining, judging, and then it loves that. It loves those states. And all you have to do here is observe that in yourself. Observe the people, observe the reaction, observe the addiction, almost addiction, to those reactive states. Observe them in yourself, and from this, the slightly humorous note of this question, makes me feel that there's already some sense of distance from it. Because when you begin to observe those patterns in yourself that don't want to let go of a resentment, a reaction, a grievance, and get in there and hang on. And you begin to observe it, that means there's spaciousness around it. Quite often, at some point, you begin to smile. And you see how, like a dog that won't let go of the bone, you won't let go of that grievance or that reaction or that resentment. Now the dog, although the dog of course lives beautifully, presence is a different matter. It's extremely rare for a dog, if it ever happens, to have spaciousness around a bone. Maybe a very old dog. And so that dog can then say, I have transcended. And perhaps when you look into the eyes of a very old dog, there's some distance there, some almost wisdom, dog wisdom, arising. However, most animals have to act according to their form, whatever corresponds to the form. And it's very rare that there's any spaciousness around that. But humans, many humans for many, many thousands of years have been the same. No spaciousness, totally conditioned, and now that possibility is there to transcend the conditioning, which does not immediately mean to exterminate the conditioning. The conditioning then weakens. So just watch yourself getting irritated and enjoy it. Rather than thinking, I'm not perfect, I'm far from perfect, I need to achieve a completely different state. This is not the state of perfection, of enlightenment. That's a projection of the mind. The state should be achieved. Any state will do, if you only allow it. It's enough. When insights come, when I feel connectedness with you teaching here and with other spiritual teachings, a sometimes overwhelming need to cry rises in me. Why not joy, bliss? Is this identification with the pain body? Maybe it is joy. Why label it at all? Let that be. Let the tears come. I cry. Not often, but it happens. And I don't know what label to attach to it. It's not sadness. It's not pain. It's more like joy. But it never even occurred to me to ask myself, what is that? It was beautiful to simply allow that. When I listened to the song, there were some tears this morning. I didn't ask myself, well, why am I crying? What's it? What label do I attach to these tears? It was beautiful to simply allow without the need to find some position with regards to them, some adopt some mental perspective on them. And if you don't adopt a mental perspective, deep down it's all joy. It's a beautiful thing not to label states that arise anymore. If that doesn't, it's not possible, then just recognize a label as a label and then it doesn't overpower you. So you can be in that state of allowing. No need to call it good or bad. I want it, don't want it, it's here. How will this happen to us, what has happened to you? When will we be fully realized? The answer to that is the last answer in the book, The Power of Now, which is when you no longer need to ask that question, because even that question is an obstacle put there by the mind and it is a way of not fully accepting this. If ego gives superiority complex, is inferiority complex being opposite preferable to superiority complex? Inferiority complex might look like ego getting lesser, but it's not the case. It's just as strong. In both cases, you have a mental image of yourself and patterns associated with that image. Inferiority complex means not as good as. Superiority complex means better than. Both are mental identifications, identifications with conceptual sense of self. And the superiority ego, the superior ego, has underneath its apparent superiority the underlying fear of not as good as. And the inferior ego, despite its apparent sense of inferiority, has an underlying desire to be more than and greater than, bigger than, just waiting. So in either case, you're trapped in mind. And how to get out of that? You know that already. Just attention to this, to what is. Surrender to this moment. The end, I've said it before, but I have to say it again because it's easy to. It's the end of conditioning, or egoic conditioning, whether it's superiority complex or inferiority, whatever it may be. Most people actually move between the two. Maybe this is a slightly speculative question, it can be short. The probability of intelligent life on other planets outside our solar system is generally accepted. After all, it is a conceit to think we are the only form of intelligent life in the cosmos. Assuming there are other forms of this intelligent life elsewhere, would they also be a part of this supreme consciousness or be enlightened or working towards enlightenment as we are, in this case, under your guidance, as we are doing? Well, any form, this is the one principle of liberation, which surely, because as above, so below, everything is reflected, it applies to the entire life of form, no matter where, it cannot not apply to that. So any, wherever consciousness appears in the disguise of forms, consciousness will also be awakening out of that play, out of that disguise. So wherever it may be, it'll be the same. The awakening of consciousness out of the dream of form, of matter, must be the same anywhere, no matter how distant the galaxy may be. And I would say this, it happens simultaneously here and in many other parts of the cosmos.